The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
Good morning and welcome to the second hour of the Bible Study here on listener-supported KFUO Radio. KFUO Radio is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. This is hour two, the Ask the Pastor hour of the Bible Study. Had a little bit of a technical difficulty yesterday we have overcome. Do you remember? Here's a little bit of trivia for you. Do you remember from way back in the day what KFUO stood for? Keeping it forward, upward, and onward. Well, we do that. We persevere, and we've gotten over this, and I hope that things remain in good form today, because our guest is Pastor Dave Andrus. He's the Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission, joins us by phone. So we'll see what happens, Pastor Dave. How are you?
I'm doing well, and how about yourself?
I'm doing okay. I could give you a list of complaints, but would you really care?
Yeah, Roland, I care.
I do. You should be running for office if you care so much.
Well, no. See, if I care, because if you get so sick and can't do that job, they may ask me to do it.
You may be better.
We need you healthy and well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, that accommodation. How goes everything at Lutheran Blind Mission?
Oh, fine. We're just plodding along. Today I'm working on the Scripture Braille calendar. It is a calendar. It's in Braille. And it has scripture references with a picture. We pick a theme for the year. And this, by the way, I'm working on 2013. So we pick a theme, and then we have to select Bible verses that will go for each month with an appropriate picture for that Bible verse. And next year we're going to do the Apostles' Creed. So January is about the Father and creation. It'll show a picture of the world, and then it'll have Genesis 1:1, or a portion of it. But then I also have to make sure everything lines up, that the Braille is correct, that the dates are correct, that we have the special holidays listed correct, and that the Bible verse is in an appropriate spot lower down, so I can have the artist then add the picture. And that's just 1 month. Then I go to the next month.
Now, you are primarily supported by contributors to your organization, right?
100%.
And how? Well, I always ask you this because it's important, because we have so many opportunities where we can show good stewardship, but I don't know that Lutheran Blind Mission necessarily comes to mind right off the bat for a lot of folks.
Yeah, it's kind of too bad, because we serve a people group that is so often overlooked. Those who are blind and visually impaired. And the majority of them live on fixed incomes, and we're talking very, very small incomes, so they can't afford anything. They also have a hard time getting to church, and even if they got to church, that's a difficult venue because buildings are so large, and when you can't see what's going on, it's very, very difficult. And so the people we serve often are isolated at home, and they just want to be connected with God and to know that God loves and cares for them. They want something that's solidly biblical-based, and so that's what we provide. Most of the people we serve are not attending church, whether it be Lutheran, Presbyterian, or anything. We serve through the materials over 4,000 people, through our outreach centers, and probably over 3,000 people. And they are so grateful that people care, and it's because God's people care and support us that we can do this.
Well, I don't know if you've been paying much attention to the news lately. There's so much going on. You know, there's that school shooting yesterday, and the economy is not the best it's been, and all kinds of wars and rumors of war. The only thing that we're missing, I think, is an earthquake thrown into the mix here.
Well, and we had that a week ago here in St. Louis.
Well, I slept through that, though. It had better be a little more spectacular than something I can sleep through before
Please don't ask for that.
I'm not asking. I'm just saying.
Oh, okay.
But here's a headline for you. Now, I started this a little bit with Dr. Belton yesterday, right before the phones, you know, took a little vacation.
Mm-hmm.
So I enter this carefully, but there's this headline: buy a gun and keep your powder dry. Economists warn of looming economic 9/11. And I was reminded as we read this morning, one of the verses, verse 22 out of Genesis chapter 8,
mm-hmm.
which says, "While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease." It seems, if you read the news, Pastor Andrus, that mm-hmm. there is a lot of preoccupation with the end of the world right now.
Mm. There usually is when times aren't good. Because people wonder, why all of a sudden are things bad? And oh my gosh, what if it gets worse? And it forces them to think about the reality of end times and of God. And I think that's sometimes why God purposefully lets things do downturns, is so people will wake up and not merely go on their way, but stop and think about him.
One of these economists, Harry Dent, in this story, says he's written a book called The Great Crash Ahead.
Mm.
No point reading the rest of the book. I think the title says it all.
Yeah.
You know, he believes that the global debt bubble is about to burst. Another one by the name of Gerald Centene says that Americans should brace themselves for what he calls an economic 9/11. He blames policymakers for their inability to solve the world's financial and economic woes. Well, if it was up to Dave Andrus, how would you fix the world's problems?
I'd ask Jesus to come back.
Well, that would just put an end to it all, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
So you go for the quick solution.
I do. Why dilly and dally around? But with that short, what would I do? I think I do see one of the severe things on the horizon, and it brought me up short last August, is our deficit. Our country is spending more than we are taking in on a regular basis. Now, I don't know if I have the numbers exactly correct, but it's roughly to the account of, if you were, as a family or an individual, bringing in $50,000, you're spending $78,000. That's about what our country is doing.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And they're talking, and again, I may not have the numbers correct, but it was staggering. We're spending a lot more than we're bringing in. And in the budget cuts that they were talking about last January, where they finally came up with no agreement, so the agreement kicked in, forcing reductions, went from $78,000 down to $72,000 with the same analogy, but yet we're still spending, bring in only $50,000. So that would be my solution, is that we need to deal with the deficit. And I know that means that some things will have to stop and people will be hurt and spending. I would try to deal with that. That would be my solution.
Has the church lost its voice? And I'm speaking broadly, because there are always exceptions. You know, I like to get out my big brushes because it saves
uh-huh.
time. But, so not neglecting the fact that there are exceptions to this, but it seems that the church has lost its voice on caring for the poor and the needy, and it's perhaps conceded that to other outlets, perhaps the government primarily. And do you think that if, as you were saying,
mm-hmm.
we sort of wake up, we grow up, pull up our big boy pants, and decide that there are hard solutions for hard problems, do you think the church is willing to step back into the gap and fill those needs if the government steps out?
Ooh, interesting question. And the answer is no and yes. To will the church step in if the government all of a sudden stopped helping the poor? At first they wouldn't, but then they would. It's kind of that dilemma that when we've been trained not to do something, to wake up to the reality we need to do something and then get going takes a little bit of time. And so I think the church would finally react, but it will take a little bit of time. To the other question, has the church lost its voice? Yes and no. When you really stop and look at what our church is doing, Look at Lutheran Blind Mission. Everything we do, and there are many other organizations that serve the poor and those who are struggling, the church is doing an awful lot. We probably could and should be doing more. Is the church being squeezed out? Yes. I know in the news in the past couple of weeks there's been a lot of talk of the federal government doing the certain things, especially in reference to forcing church run insurance plans to provide contraceptions. And the church has spoken up and said, stop, that's a violation of our conscience, you can't do that. It might be that this is a wake-up call. We do speak, but sometimes the government has been slowly squeezing us out, I think, and we don't exactly know how to speak up anymore.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. If you want to get in by way of email, now is your opportunity to speak up, as Pastor Andrus was just saying. Call in now. The phone lines are open. You can send an email now. You know, Pastor Andrus, perhaps, you know, I've said it enough, perhaps if you said it, you know, they don't have to wait till the last 5 minutes to call.
You don't have to wait for the last 5 minutes to call. Call now. The lines are open. We are waiting.
You know, we were talking about, doomsday. And it,
right.
People, I think it's the natural instinct of man that when something's going on, he doesn't like feeling helpless.
Right.
You know, this is how we get into decision theology and all sorts of things like this. We don't want to think that we don't have some semblance of control or some ability to respond to mm-hmm. what's going on around us.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those responses come in good form, and sometimes they come in very bad form.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that really scares people is the idea of Islamic terrorism, this talk of a global caliphate being established, and all these things that we've been hearing about since 9/11 have really been brought to the front.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are presented with the case of the Iranian pastor who has just been sentenced to death last week. And the way the court system works in Iran, they can walk him out of his cell at any time
mm-hmm.
and dispatch him. And he was originally a Muslim. He converted to Christianity, became a pastor, and now has been proselytizing Muslims. And the Iranians have not thought too clearly about this. So now we get to the point where we find this headline this morning. Terry Jones. Remember Terry Jones?
I do.
Yeah, Terry Jones pledges to burn more Qurans and Prophet Muhammad images if Iranian pastor is not released. Now, I thought about this for a while this morning. I didn't know if I wanted to do this, but I thought for the benefit of our discussion, maybe good to hear Terry Jones in his own words, and then you can address how he confronts this problem.
Okay.
We demand the immediate release of Pastor Youssef. Pastor Youssef is a pastor in Iran who has been found guilty. Has been found guilty of converting from Islam, the religion of death, to Christianity. He has been found guilty of evangelizing Muslims. The Iranian government has sentenced him to be executed. We demand that they release Pastor Youssef immediately. If not, we will be calling for a worldwide burning of the Quran and a worldwide burning of images of Muhammad. President Hussein Obama said, Islam has a long history of tolerance. President Obama is a liar and a traitor. We demand the immediate release of Pastor Youssef. Thank you.
Well, Pastor Dave, number one, you can understand why I thought about that before I played it this morning, but I think it's good for people to hear it. This is seen as the voice of the church today.
Uh-huh.
What do you do with Terry Jones?
Oh. You know, I, when I heard it, my heart was sinking. We demand. Who is he to demand?
Well, the thing is that the staging of this video, if people watch it, mm-hmm. it's just as creepy as the guys over there who cut the heads off people.
Really?
It's badly lit. It's you could hear from the quality of the audio. It's
right.
not. It's kind of like on a home handy cam kind of thing.
Right.
And I don't know if he did that intentionally, but it looks just like these Islamic extremists, the way they do their videos,
mm-hmm.
making their demands.
The only thing I'm trying to think of this dispassionately, without letting my emotions get into things. The only thing that may have some weight to what he is doing is that he's calling upon the people of the Islamic faith to say, "Don't do this," and that the people will say, We don't want more Qurans to be burnt. Let the guy go. Save our Quran. I suppose that's what he's aiming for to have happen. Certainly under our laws of the United States, he has the freedom of religion that he can do this. You know, I struggle... And maybe some of our callers will call in. Now, this is at this moment I'm not speaking as a pastor, but more as Dave reflecting on this. To for us, even in our government, to say there are rights, inalienable rights for of humanity that he should be released. I'm not sure we can even do that. For we all live under governments, and if I'm not mistaken, there are laws, and the key problem is this man was Muslim, he switched to Christianity, and then he proselytized.
Right.
And so their laws are of the land that he could have been a Christian if he wouldn't proselytize, or he could have left. And so they have to have some autonomy as a country as well. So I struggle with this on all sides. And then to have you play this from one of our citizens, oh gosh, that just really muddies the water. It really does.
Well, I've heard the term nutty and worse applied to Terry Jones. I don't know him. I would say some of his ideas are kind of nutty because perhaps he thinks of himself as one of these great defenders of the church. But can you imagine...
Yeah.
How many Christians right now, I mean, whether it's Iraq or Afghanistan,
mm-hmm.
Egypt,
mm-hmm.
Syria, how much more Christian blood will be spilled because this guy thinks he's defending the church?
It certainly is possible, yes. Yes, it is certainly possible that people will be killed or persecuted because of this. And that is backfiring by what he wants to do.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Pastor Dave, we had John Squared in the last segment of the program. Today we have David to the power of two. Dave, thanks for calling.
Rolling, that's me again.
That's all right. You're always welcome, my friend.
Thank you. Just a couple points. You know, I called initially with a comment on the Pope, but I'm going to bring another point in. It really doesn't matter if we say anything or not, as far as Christians, they're going to kill us anyway. But I think what's needed in the Christian world is maybe a little more guts and gumption to maybe say things like that. You know, all this is just a continuation of the wars centuries ago with Islam. It's nothing changed. And whether we say anything or not, they're going to attack us and try to kill us anyway. But the other comment I had is, I type in on Google about Pope John Paul worshiping with voodoo priests and Buddhists and Indians, and I got a bunch of pictures back in the 80s and early 90s, I think, of Pope John Paul going through rites with voodoo priests and Indians and Hindus, and I thought to myself, the only reason I typed it in was because I heard a particular ministry say that he did things like this, and I thought, man, what is the church world coming to? I mean, all this inclusivism take anybody and be so inclusive that nothing matters anymore. I don't know. Have you guys ever heard or seen pictures? I don't know if they're true pictures or if they're just fake, or, but if they are true, it's a sham. And could you comment on both points, please?
I've not seen those, David, Pastor Andrus.
There is a, and I believe it is a papal bull, which means it's a strong statement of emphatic truth by the Pope, and I don't remember what year or which and when, but that they believe what we tend to call anonymous Christianity, that as long as you are faithful in the religion you are born in, you will be saved. And it's on the basis of that that the Pope has done such things. It's his way of trying to incorporate as many people into salvation as possible, to appease as many people as possible with, well, some people see it as inflammatory that the only way of salvation is Jesus Christ. And so the Roman Catholic Church has quietly done this. So I'm not surprised that you found such pictures. Not surprised at all.
Yeah, I bet you a lot of Catholics don't know it. You could say you can do research on it, but it sure, you don't come through Jesus. There's only one place you're going to.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate the call. Yeah, I think, Pastor Andrus, that's referred to as the doctrine of the anonymous Christian.
Thank you.
Let's continue with the phone callers and go to John. Since you commended them to call early, they have. We should probably honor those phone calls. John, you're back on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, Roland. Good morning, Pastor Dave.
Good morning, John.
If I may call you Pastor Dave.
Sure.
Okay. Boy, where do I had a comment. I actually had a question, but wow, boy, we're I don't have much time here before the break. So, the question I had basically was concerning the office of the ministry. And I, don't get me wrong, I sure am glad that you pastors are around and you do your thing, because I'd be really. But where was that established at in Scripture? I've always wondered that.
Okay.
I mean, not that I don't believe it, but I find it fascinating.
Yeah. You find it primarily in the epistles of Paul to Timothy and Titus.
Okay.
And it is not just direct, boom, you have to have this office.
Right.
But it's, I don't want to say inferred, but it's stated. Well, and you do have a strong statement in Ephesians chapter 4, chapter 4 about verse 9 and 10, where it says, and God gave some to be apostles, some to be pastors, some to be teachers.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So, and then what we've done is, in our understanding, is how we fill it out. And this is the example I usually give when I'm teaching confirmation, whether it's kids or adults. Is every city has a representative. We usually call him a mayor. He's elected by the people, and he acts on behalf of the people that year. And pretty much whatever he puts his name to is law. And
okay.
But
yeah.
He is not, I mean, so if the guy's a scoundrel and a cheat, it doesn't invalidate the things he writes and laws, but he will be kicked out.
Right. I remember.
Pretty much the same thing is true with the office of the ministry.
Okay.
We have our power, our authority, given by God's people, because really it is first, everyone is a priest. The power is, of forgiveness and the forgiveness of sins is given to God's people, but God's people then turn and say, we need someone to act on our behalf, and that's why we call it the public ministry. And in the public setting, the pastor then acts on behalf of the people. And it's not based on who he is, but his office. And one last comment with that, then, and just a couple weeks ago with the junior confirmation class that I taught, I said, and so as you're privately in a family, you can forgive sins by saying to your brother or sister, I forgive you. Because that's a private ministry, which we all should be about as well.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thanks for the call, John. Good to hear from you. Pastor Dave Andrus, our guest this morning on Ask the Pastor. You can join us, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Herman, when we get back from the break, you'll be up next. Stand by.
Dr. C.F.W. Walther once told his seminary students, "I wish to talk the Christian doctrine into your very heart, enabling you to come forward as living witnesses with a demonstration of the Spirit and of power. I do not want you to be standing in your pulpits like lifeless statues, but to speak with confidence and cheerful courage." Today, Concordia Seminary still strives to do just that.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Diane Olger was 2 weeks from delivering her baby girl, but Mark, her husband, couldn't wait. He had only days to live. After surgery for colon cancer and 6 months of chemotherapy, Mark and Diane thought he had beaten the disease. Complications from the chemo scarred and thickened his lungs. It was a fatal condition. Mark's dying wish was to see his daughter. The doctors suggested Diane be induced, and she readily agreed. As she delivered Savannah, Mark was lying in a bed next to hers. When his daughter was placed in his arms, he cried. He held Savannah for nearly an hour. They were precious minutes because Mark soon grew very weak and died 5 days later. But Diane will make sure Savannah knows how much her daddy loved her.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
During the season of Lent, KFUO Radio will broadcast live midweek worship services from Peace Lutheran Church in South St. Louis County. Be listening Wednesdays in Lent at 11 in the morning for these special broadcasts. Pastor Dennis Kastens will be leading the worship. Lent is a season of preparation so that we all may better appreciate the death and resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ. KFUO Radio will assist in your preparation. Be listening for our live Lenten worship broadcast Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on KFUO Radio.
When you are teaching children about a Sunday school lesson, it is not sufficient just to give the facts of the story. Instead, we are to apply the facts to the life of the child. And that's what we're going to be doing on the next broadcast of Law and Gospel with the help of our friend Pastor Mark Smith as we examine the Sunday school lesson for this coming Sunday. 1 o'clock, Monday through Friday.
On KFUO Radio.
Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, host of Issues Etc., talk radio for the thinking Christian. Issues Etc. is produced by Lutheran Public Radio, and beginning Monday, March the 12th, you can listen live in St. Louis, weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO Radio. Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio, Issues Etc. So tune in and call in live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO Radio, starting Monday, March 12th.
The Archdiocese of Omaha has begun the process of seeking Roman Catholic sainthood for Father Edward Flanagan, the priest who founded Boys Town. Flanagan founded his orphanage in 1917 after realizing there was little he could do for homeless men. Flanagan, who died in 1948, said in an undated interview,
"The causes for their being tramps were almost always the same. The boyhoods they had spent were very similar."
Recordings of the Boys Town founder are from the archives of the Father Flanagan League.
"No one knows what is in the soul of a boy, what possibilities may lie hidden in an aching, broken heart. Who can say one of these neglected boys may not be the greatest man of his time?"
Flanagan said there were many success stories.
"My home has a long list of alumni in which I have more than a little pride."
Today, Boys Town runs programs for troubled boys and girls throughout the country. I'm Steve Coleman.
Good morning. Welcome back to the second hour of the Bible study here on listener-supported KFUO Radio. It's the Ask the Pastor Hour. Pastor Dave Andrus, our guest from Lutheran Blind Mission, he serves as the executive director of Lutheran Blind Mission, and you probably heard Pastor Dave at the start of the program, if you've been with us, talk a little bit about the work of Lutheran Blind Mission. We'll get to that again right before we leave, Pastor Dave, and you give the contact information and encourage folks to support the work that you do. But as I promised, let's go back to the phones and go right to Herman. Herman, thank you for calling. You're on next.
Yes, just two comments on your subject. The militant Muslims don't need a Quran-burning episode
for their seemingly excuse to attack Christians. That goes on in places around the world without any such episode in the news, from the nature of what the Quran teaches and how those elements whip up their followers. Two, talking about the church replacing the government in terms of welfare, that would be the most effective thing that you could try to propose with that is that the morality of the recipients who want welfare reflected what the church taught. Because I've seen instances of people who want to be helped, let's say a woman who wants the church to pay for a motel room while she indulges in her alcoholic addiction habit. You can't have a transfer of entitlement from the government to the church. It won't work. And so unless there is a sense of authority in what the church believes and can exercise and a respect for it on the part of the recipients to the extent that they will make good stewardship of the help they give, you can't. It's going to be difficult to talk about taking that on and against the government, even though it's as mixed up as it is now.
Pastor Dave?
Thank you, Herman. I do tend to agree, especially I think the key phrase you said in what was the phrase? In not competition with the government, but you're absolutely correct. If the government is going to continue to do that, the church would have a very difficult time doing it. The question was, if the government stopped doing it, would the church pick things up? And I think they would. I really do think they would, and they would do more. Herman, you raise a good point, though, in reference to the authority that sometimes the church has the ability to say, no, we won't do it here and there because it violates ultimately what we're trying to accomplish. Where the government has a little bit more difficult time doing that, especially as it's trying to show no favoritism or bias one way or another. It almost ties its hands sometimes because of that.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I think Herman raises an interesting point, Pastor, and that is not so much supplying the need, but changing the attitude. We don't seem to be very good at that these days.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And probably it's going to take a whole change of our setting and situation for the church. Just and that's kind of why I was, and this might not be what you're thinking, but it is what I'm thinking. If the government were to pull out the attitude of people, well, give it to me and such, the church just can't step in and deal and do with it. There will need to be a fundamental change of attitude. And that will probably only come with a huge change of social situations. And when that comes, well, as it did with the Great Depression, people were very humbled and therefore grateful for whatever help they did receive. And in that context, I think the church will be able to do a wonderful thing.
Whoa, wait a minute. You mean I'm not owed a free education, I'm not owed a free car, I'm not owed a free home, and I have to be thankful on top of it when you give me one? Well, aren't you just a radical?
I am. And so that's the thing, and I alluded to that even before with Iran, is our government is trying to imply that we have unalienable rights. And not everyone agrees with what the government is stating are unalienable rights, whether it's imposed upon our citizenship or upon the world.
Hmm. Let's go back to the phones, Pastor Dave, and talk with Larry. Larry, good morning. Thanks for calling the program.
Good morning there, Roland. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning, Larry.
You know, first, a Christian brother's life is at stake. That is worth something. That's worth quite a bit. But does Terry Jones represent the church?
Well, in the eyes of some, he does. Now, you and I...
That's where the real problem lies.
That's why I played the audio, because
right.
People need to hear what he says.
You know, you've got... You know, P- pastors can really have a lot of influence over one's lives. You know, our president went to a church where he heard this black liberation theology. Well, it's incorporated in his being. It's incorporated in his politics. Terry Jones, the same thing, you know, and Herman hit it right on the button. They do not need a Quran burning for the impetus to kill anybody that steps in their way. That, you know, that's what they do. That's what their religion teaches. So I don't think that, you know, I'm offended by the incendiary comments by Terry Jones, because in my opinion, Terry Jones, Jeremiah Wright, on and on and on, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton, these guys don't represent God's true church here on earth. They're, you know, the marks of the church are word and sacrament. What we hear out of these churches is a lot of secular verbiage. They're not spreading the gospel, and by, you know, inflaming, they don't, not that they need to be inflamed, but it's not the Christian message to go around burning property. It's craziness. I'd like the pastor's comments. I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry. I didn't make comment with you, earlier with Herman and also with David's comment. The extreme Muslims, you're absolutely correct. They don't need reason to attack Christians. They will. My concern is that this will infuriate some Muslims who aren't the radical, but who are just semi-peace-loving or neutral, that it will infuriate them. Second thing, I think, Larry, you brought me full circle, and I hadn't said it earlier, because I was taking one opinion, and you were right to bring me to task, gently as you did. It is one person's life, and it is worth speaking of. This pastor, we do need to speak on his behalf. I think it is appropriate that our federal government try to talk and indicate to Iran that though your laws are such, show human compassion and don't kill him, let him go, or something else. I think all of those acts of diplomacy are good and should be carried through. They really should. Third thing, then, though, is what we are finding, and this is the dilemma that we find always on the world scene, and we found it throughout the decades and the centuries and throughout history. When a radical opinion is held by the leadership, it will move that government into radical action. And I think, in my opinion anyway, I think that's what we're seeing with Iran, that we have some radical Muslims who are in charge and in control, and they're pushing their agenda.
You know, Dr. John Loam, who runs the Ethnic Immigrant Institute here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, I don't know if you've had a chance to meet him or not.
Oh, I have, many times.
What an incredible man he is. He would commend us to remember that you know, there are just as many varieties of Muslims as there are Christians.
Indeed.
And what we're talking about are the radicalized ones. He being an African says that often many parts of the face of Islam in Africa are radically different, no pun intended, than the Arabic-flavored one. So I just throw that out there for consideration, that we're not, you know, again, I like I said earlier, Pastor Dave, I like getting my big brush out. It saves time.
Yeah.
But sometimes you miss those fine details. You know, the other side of what's going on here, not just what's happening with Terry Jones in Florida trying to offer some type of a response, perhaps out of frustration, perhaps out of bad intention, perhaps out of just being ignorant of how to appropriately do this as a Christian. There is all the business going on in Afghanistan right now, which seems to be escalating every day. The president has apologized. They've sent emissaries out to mosques here in the United States. Most recently, one of the assistant secretaries of defense was sent out to a Washington, D.C. area mosque to apologize for what happened at the Bagram base. And then, you know, one of the political candidates stepped on the scene here. And what's interesting is there's a certain word that he uses that I've not heard very frequently when discussing this topic. I want to see if you can pick up on it.
As we've seen now overseas, we're seeing increasingly tensions flaring. Just look at what's going on in Afghanistan. and the violence and the hatred over what? Over a mistake. Over something that was a mistake, clearly unintended, and yet these violent, in many respects evil, folks who are taking that as an opportunity to foment friction and violence in Afghanistan. This is what it does. This is what evil does when it seizes an opportunity to tell a lie about what's going on. Our country respects all religions, treats all religions with dignity and religious freedom, unlike the people who are out killing our troops and protesting right now in the streets of Afghanistan. We're tolerant. We understand and respect those religions. And yet, these forces of evil that have been fighting us in Afghanistan and across the Middle East, and frankly, yes, in this country too, have no tolerance. They have no respect for human life. They have respect for their own radical ideology, and that's it. And for this country to waver, to apologize, to back down in one bit, not only encourages them, but I believe incites them.
That was Rick Santorum, Pastor Dave. And the word, there was a word that jumped out at me. I don't know if you picked up on what I was thinking. What do you think the word is that caught my attention?
I'm not sure. I caught a couple different words there. I don't know.
No, for me it was the word evil.
Oh, that one.
And how we have so... This word has become so pedestrian, so common. Everything is evil. I got too much homework last night. My teacher's evil.
Were you at my supper table last night?
No, but I have a daughter who goes to Lutheran South.
Okay, well, so does mine.
Yeah, but everything today, something doesn't go my way. It's evil. It's, step on a crack, break your mother's back. We try and avoid evil, and we try and, repel evil with some sort of incantations and folk wisdom and that sort of thing. What really is evil, and is the greatest threat it poses to us making it common and trivial and ignoring it ultimately in the end?
Well, I think you make an extremely good point, but I got to take two steps back and say, as we're on the radio and airing across this greater city of St. Louis and throughout the world, that in our 21st century, because information is getting out so much, we have people like Terry Jones. We have instant news. The premier of Austria was killed, which started World War One. It took many
Franz Ferdinand.
Yeah, thank
Archduke
you.
Franz Ferdinand.
Archduke, yeah. It took days, if not weeks, for people to hear this news. Now we know it within seconds. And we have ways that we can, as people, not just the key people in government, but people, average Joe like you and me, that we have ways to speak up about it. I think that the marketplace has become a throng of voices, and we are having a hard time dealing with it.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's information overload.
Yeah. Indeed.
But that word evil, I really wonder if we have a good understanding of what evil actually is.
Oh, heavens, no.
Because, so long as Satan is this pathetic figure, this cartoon character in a union suit with a, rubber-tipped pitchfork and, long tail, how do you, as a pastor, teach about evil? Is it something we should be warning about from our pulpits every Sunday?
Huh. That's an interesting concept. Interesting. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil.
Evil. And that's not my teacher giving too much homework.
I think, though, what the candidate mentioned and referred to, just because one action, people are being killed, I think on a human level, that might be called evil. Retaliation to just cut people down ruthlessly unexpected with no warning, that tends to be evil. Just like the drug dealer who says, hey, you didn't do this, and he not only kills the person who was trying to buy the drugs, but then goes after three innocent people in his family who had nothing to do with that whatsoever. That's, I think, a definition of evil. But it doesn't go to the depth as what you're referring to, which is the spiritual evil that the devil inflicts upon us who aren't innocent, but who are guilty, but who are tortured because of our own sins. And we who are forgiven still can be tortured by the devil, by our own guilt, because we don't accept and embrace the forgiveness offered by Jesus. That's truly evil.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. We have reached that magic portion of the hour, Pastor, where everybody likes to call in.
Okay.
So we'll get ready for the phone lines to light up for you. You know, we were talking about Terry Jones. Here's another interesting response to Christians who come under threat. Don't know if you've been paying attention to Nigeria, but apparently there's quite a wave of violence going through the African state of Nigeria against Christians and Christian churches, and there have been bombings and attacks. Here's a headline. It says, Nigerian churchgoers club would-be suicide bomber to death after his car bomb fails to kill him.
Oh.
Angry churchgoers at the headquarters of the Church of Christ in the Nations in Nigeria clubbed to death a would-be suicide bomber after his car bomb failed to kill him. The Associated Press reports that the suicide car bomber killed three people and wounded 38. So apparently it did go off, but it didn't kill him. The radical Islamicist sect called Boko Haram claimed responsibility for the attack. And the attack follows several assaults over the course of the past several months in Nigeria's Christian northern region. We see good Christian charity. They just finished the job. He wasn't capable of doing it himself.
I think of Mahatma Gandhi, who did a quiet, peaceful revolution. Did not let his followers use violence, and because of that, won independence of India. If we use violence, we will be hit with violence. It always is retaliation. And so whenever that type of action is used, it will only create more. I would guess more people now retaliate against Christians in Nigeria because they killed somebody.
I would say probably the difference, Pastor Dave, tell me what you think of this, is that the British Empire had a foundation in Western Greek philosophy. They had a common understanding of violence and nonviolence, and they appealed to their gentler natures. I don't know that most Muslim cultures have the same benefit of an understanding of peace and nonviolence. I don't know how successful Gandhi would have been if he would have been coming up Islamic occupiers.
Interesting question. Just to play the, excuse the pun here, devil's advocate on that, though, I think that there is enough within Islam that would refer to peace. We hear so much of the militaristic slant that we forget that three-fourths of the Muslims are peaceful people. And it very well could be, if it was orchestrated correctly, that it could have been successful even in a Muslim setting.
I just note that because I've interviewed some people who've said that it's the failure of Islamic countries to sort of Hellenize in their understanding. They become extreme literalists of the Quran, whereas we understand that stoning harlots in the street was for that time, and it's not for now. Christ has come to fulfill the law, which is why we don't do this.
I don't know. You can make a case for that, although I think if you talk to certain sociologists, they would refer more to the fact that many of the Muslim countries are not democratic but authoritarian.
Ah.
And that it's because of that you end up having dictators.
And when the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from its youth. Mm-hmm. Funny how it all goes back to Genesis.
It does. Yes, it does.
There's one other story I wanted to bring up here, just because, you know, we led into this talking a little bit about evil, mm-hmm. and we've got about 2 or 3 minutes left here.
Okay.
The whole issue of abortion is front and center again with the HHS mandate and abortive services and,
right.
and matters of conscience. It's getting more and more difficult to fight these battles, I think, because you have people who allegedly are educated, people who are allegedly intelligent, coming up with this. Here's the headline for you. Ethicists are arguing in favor of after birth abortions as newborns are not persons. Someone named Alberto Gublini, I think I've got that right, with Monash University in Melbourne, down in Australia, and Francesca Minerva at the Center for Applied Philosophy and Public Ethics at the University of Melbourne, have written that circumstances occurring after birth, such that they would have to be able to justify abortions, occur, and what we call afterbirth abortion should be permissible.
I don't think you can use that phrase, after birth abortion. I object to that. The word abortion means destroying that which is within the uterine. And so say after birth abortion, it's an oxymoron. It's incorrect. It's a subtlety of words that is trying to get one's thought across, which is absolutely incorrect. Absolutely incorrect. I would fight it on semantics first, and then let's deal with the reality once we got the semantics cleared up. It's not afterbirth abortion. It's afterbirth killing. Okay, now do we want to talk, is this a real life? And I think with the word killing there, you're going to squirm a bit more, and that's why they're using the word abortion. Oh my, oh boy.
You see what I mean? When it comes to defining what evil really is,
yeah,
you know, the dangers of trivializing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is remarkably evil. This is a living human being. It's not the discussion about a clump of cells. Is it or is it not a person? This clearly is a living, breathing human being.
Yeah.
Who, if the mother or father or whomever looks down and says, nah, blue eyes wanted brown, I'll try again.
Uh-huh. Well, it's a devaluation of human life.
You've got a friend in the background, apparently.
I have a clock that at every hour it plays a different bird. Yes, indeed.
That would last about 5 minutes in my house.
Oh, I love it.
Do you?
I love it.
Yep. Pastor Dave, we've got about 50, oh, about a little bit less than a minute here. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about Lutheran Blind Missions, how our listeners can support the work that you do in terms of good stewardship of those who need our help?
Thank you very much. Lutheran Blind Mission is ultimately seeking to care for the souls of those who are blind and vision impaired, who don't get out among society, who usually are sitting at home. We do that by doing materials. We do it also by doing outreach centers, by bringing them out. People can help by donating not just funds, but time as well. Our website is www.blindmission.org, and there's ways on that website that you can see to donate, as well as ways that you can investigate to see how you might help in volunteering time.
Pastor Dave Andrus, thank you so much. You know, if I had a clock like that, it wouldn't chirp. It'd say, I taught a putty tat.
Oh.
Take care, my friend. Good talking with you again.
And you.
All the best. God bless. Well, that's it for today, guys. We're back tomorrow with a Bible study. More Ask the Pastor coming up next after the top of the hour news. Pastor Mark Hawkinson, Moments of Assurance. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Listen Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at KFUO.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.